leap and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Today and every Sunday at this hour, WMCA and the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem bring you a series of vivid programs based on the theme of Roy Oatley's book, New World A-Coming, produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Last week, we presented the first of two broadcasts dramatizing Freedom Road, Howard Fast's great novel of the post-Civil War era in the South. We told the story of Gideon Jackson, ex-slave and former soldier in the Union Army, who led the Negro people in those turbulent days that saw the budding of democracy in the South and the beginning of the Ku Klux Klan. Today, you'll hear the second and final section of Freedom Road, adapted for radio by Michael Sklar, and starring Frederick O'Neill as Gideon Jackson, with Hilda Sims as Rachel, and Will Gear as Sheriff Bentley.
The time is February 1877. The place, the White House in Washington. It's late afternoon of a bleak day, and outside it's snowing, large wet flakes that dissolve against the White House windows. In one of the upstairs rooms, President Ulysses S. Grant sits hunched behind his desk, tired, his beard streaked with gray, his eyes sunken and red-rimmed. Near him sits Gideon Jackson, Negro representative from South Carolina. Now, as he leans across the desk, he braces himself for the greatest struggle of his career.
Do you want me to say what's on my mind, Mr. President?
I'm listening, Gideon.
I think this is the last time for a long while to come that a Negro congressman will sit in the office of the President of the United States.
Now, Gideon, don't exaggerate.
I've showed you the proof, Mr. President.
Don't shout at me, Gideon.
I'm trying to reach you, Mr. President. Do you remember the South Carolina Convention about 9 years ago?
Yes, of course.
I served on that convention. Later on, I served a term in the state Senate. And 5 years ago, I came to Congress. Now, I ask you, what was Reconstruction? Why is it being destroyed?
I'm listening, Gideon.
Reconstruction was the death of the plantation slave system in the South. Slavery had to be destroyed. It was. Out of the Civil War came the test of whether Negroes and poor whites could live and work together. We passed that test, Mr. President. And together we built schools, created just courts, educated a whole eager generation in the South.
Gideon, make your point.
This is the point. The corn planters, the cotton planters, the former slave owners, they've not given up. They've organized their own private army.
Ku Klux Klan.
Yes. And only the presence of the Union troops in the South will continue to preserve order. The day you leave the White House and Rutherford Hayes takes office, those troops will be withdrawn. We'll be put back 100 years. Our schools will be demolished. Our courts will become a mockery and a shambles of justice, Mr. President.
If I accept what you say, what can I do? I'm leaving the White House in a few days.
But you are still president. Go before the Congress. Let the people of the country know that Hayes and the plantation owners have made a bargain. Let them know that he has agreed to withdraw federal troops from the South in return for his own political advantage.
I can't, Gideon.
You must.
No.
Mr.
No. Too foolish. I'm old and sick of politics. I want only to finish my term and be left alone.
The whole future of the country is at stake.
Can't change my mind, Gideon. No. No, Gideon.
Mr. President.
No. I'll do nothing. And the nation will survive.
Gideon Jackson left the White House. Outside in the snow, his son Jeff was waiting for him. Jeff had only recently returned from Europe, where he'd spent 8 years studying medicine. They turned up their coat collars and began to walk against the wind. Gideon still thought of his son as a boy, but Jeff was a grown man. A man with a profession. Gideon wanted his son to remain in the North, but Jeff had other ideas.
I'm going back to Kawa with you, Father.
Hey, say, listen to me, son. I told you what the president said. You know what I expect will happen in the South.
That's all the more reason why I should return to Kawa.
Jeff, you've finally become a doctor. You've been away a long time learning your profession. A long time away from Caldwell. You just stay up here in the North until we see how things turn out.
We know how things will turn out. There's going to be bloodshed, and you'll need a doctor.
Yeah, I know. Maybe so, but can't you see, Jeff, you've got your entire life in front of you. I don't want you to be wasted.
I couldn't stay here while all hell breaks loose in the South. Oh, no. I'm going back with you, Father. I'm going back to Caldwell.
Train for Richmond and Florence, South. All aboard.
It was cold and drafty in the Washington Railroad Station. The passengers hurried into the train, whites entering the forward coaches, Negroes walking further back.
Colored folks in the rear coach only. Last car for colored folks.
Get in, Jeff.
You're a member of Congress. I can't do this.
Jeff, you've been away so long that you've forgotten. There's a name for these segregated coaches. They call them Jim Crow cars. Get in, son. Back in Caldwell, South Carolina, the Negro and white farmers had joined hands to build a prosperous community in the face of the growing threat of the Klan. Gideon had been a slave on this plantation. He'd led these people out of slavery, and they'd sent him to Congress in Washington. The homecoming of Representative Jackson and his son was an event. Rachel, Gideon's wife, celebrated their return with a party.
Homecoming party, Gideon.
Folks seem to be having a mighty fine time, honey.
Yes, but what about you, Gideon?
Oh, me?
You can't hide nothing from me. I'm your wife, Gideon. Something's worrying you.
Father, maybe you ought to introduce me to some of these white folks. I'm sure I know them, but their names slip my mind.
Oh, why, sure, son.
Oh, Abner.
Want me, Gideon?
Hey, you remember my son, Jeff?
Well, ain't she the lad since he's a little scalawag? Welcome home, boy. Glad to have you back. They tell me you've become a doctor.
Yes, I am.
Oh! Oh, Lord! Gideon!
Rachel, what's wrong?
Look at the door.
God almighty! Gideon. That's Fred McHugh!
Gideon! Abner!
Help me!
My arm!
Look to him, Jeff.
All right, but quiet down the people.
Quiet, folks. Quiet, please. Please, stand back.
Hand me that bottle of liquor, Mr. Lake.
Here you are. What happened to him, Jeff?
His arm's in a wrench out of his sockets, and he's been beaten. Just about beaten to death. This whiskey may revive him.
Help me. Gideon. Don't listen. Hit me.
See, who did this to you, Fred?
The Klan. Jason Yuka and his gang come to our house. Took out me and Sally. Hung us up and ripped us off.
Fred. Fred. Can you help him, Jeff?
No. He's dead.
Dead. You hear that? Fred McHugh is dead. And the Klan killed him. The Ku Klux Klan had struck its first blow at Caldwell. White shirts had taken their first two lives. Gideon knew this was only the beginning. He knew the Klan would take the law into its bloody and bigoted hands when President Rutherford Hayes removed the federal troops from the South. So he went to Charleston, to Colonel Williams, commander of federal troops in South Carolina.
Come in, Congressman. Sorry to have kept you waiting. But I'm a busy man today.
Preparing to move out your troops, Colonel Williams?
Leaving tomorrow, and there's a lot to be done. But what can I do for you, sir?
My business is in connection with the withdrawal of your troops. Here's a copy of a telegram I sent to President Hayes in Washington. Read it.
Telegram, President, huh? Mr. President, I beseech you to delay your action withdrawing federal troops from South Carolina. Pro-Reconstruction people are dependent on federal protection. I fear rioting and terror. Signed, Representative Gideon Jackson. Well?
An answer to that telegram should come in a few days. And until it comes, I beg you not to withdraw your troops.
I'm sorry, sir, but my orders are...
I know you have orders, Colonel. And I'm not asking a personal favor. This is a matter of life and death to a great many people.
I can't do it, Representative. I would be court-martialed.
I still have some influence in Washington.
I can't do it, I tell you. Believe me, sir, however much I might want to, I can't. I'm a soldier, not a politician.
Your troops leave tomorrow. Do you know what'll happen here the day after?
Yes, I have eyes, sir.
And you still refuse to delay your departure?
I have no choice, Mr. Jackson.
Well, good day, Colonel.
Wait. What are you going to do, sir?
We both know what the Klan's going to do. They're going to ride. But they'd better not come to Carwell. We've got arms, Colonel. We're going to use them. The Constitution gives the people of this nation the right to defend themselves.
News of the withdrawal of federal troops was received in gloomy silence at Carwell. Brother Peter, the old minister, muttered something about trusting the Lord. The men glanced at their shotguns. But community life ran smoothly enough in the grooves of routine. Until the morning of April 18th, when things came to a full stop. Gideon was up on the hill cutting down a tall pine tree when Sheriff Bentley's gig pulled up before his house. Two men climbed up, the sheriff and Jason Cougar. Gideon dropped his axe, picked up his shotgun, and went to meet them.
Good morning, Sheriff. Cougar.
Say, Mr. Cougar, when you speak to me, nigger.
Got business here, Sheriff?
Seems yesterday afternoon, two niggers come around Clark Hastings' house in Columbia and start screwing around with his little girl. The only reason they don't get far is because Clark comes in off. It's a fracas and the niggers run away.
What's that got to do with us, Sheriff?
Them niggers are Carwell people. We want them niggers.
On what charge?
Assault and attempted rape.
Who are these men you charge?
Hannibal Washington and Andrew Sherman. They were recognized.
Well, I won't talk about your story, Sheriff. It don't concern me. But about Hannibal and Andrew, and neither of those men have been in town for a week.
Damn it, nigger, you're trying to make us out to be lying?
Let me handle this, Hugo. Now, Gideon, I'd like to settle this here business quiet and peaceable.
You mean you want me to turn over two men on a trumped-up charge of rape?
Yes.
Sheriff, I can vouch for it. Neither Hannibal nor Andrew left Carwell this week.
I'm going to make the arrest, Gideon. Are you going to obstruct me?
Put it that way if you like. But I'm not going to let you hang two innocent men.
I'm warning the nigger. I'll arrest those men if I have to deputize every white man in the state.
The Klan will stand behind you, Sheriff.
I don't doubt that the Klan will stand behind you. But meanwhile, you're standing on my land. We don't want your kind in Carwell. Get out.
Well, damn it, nigger, you'll be sorry.
Come along, Hugo. You go on. We'll be back.
Once again, the men of Carwell met in the community schoolhouse. They sat tight-lipped, holding their guns across their knees. Andrew Sherman was the first to speak.
I don't want to make no trouble, Gideon. Maybe if Hannibal and me gave ourselves up, they wouldn't do nothing so bad as hanging.
Andy, they'd string you up as sure as you're sitting in this room.
Yeah, Abner Late's right. They would hang you, Andy. If the Klan got two of our people and hanged them, it'd just sharpen the appetite for more.
But what else can we do, Gideon?
Well, that's what we're here to decide. I think the sheriff and the Klan will be back tonight. As I see it, we can stay in our homes and be murdered by twos and threes. Or we can all of us stay together and fight.
I'm all for fighting, Gideon. I like to stand up for what's mine. But how? We ain't an army.
If we fight, it means all of us getting together in one place. A place big enough for the women and children, too.
Yeah. How about the Carwell Mansion House?
That's the place I had in mind. Big enough and stands on the hill commanding the countryside. Well, what's it going to be? Give in? Or fight?
By God, we'll fight.
Yeah,
we'll fight those white-shirted skunks right into the ground.
All right, all right. We'll fight this thing. We'll show the whole country what's happening here in the South. Get your families together. Take food and guns. By sundown, we've got to be settled in the Mansion House.
The Carwell Plantation House had stood empty ever since the end of slavery in the South. Now it was to be inhabited by people struggling for their lives. All that long afternoon, women loaded wagons with precious household things. And each wagon load was a personal tragedy.
Always was mighty proud of that old brass bed, Ma. Your wedding bed. Sure do hate to leave it behind.
But these is my good linens, Jack. So fine and white. I've been saving them.
Bring them along, Mother. They can be cut up into bandages.
Only one of the men, Trooper, a great slow giant of a man, decided to remain behind with his family. Sundown found the other Carwell people installed in the plantation house. Gideon formed the men into committees, posted guards, and organized work for the women and children. And after the work, sleep. Until they were awakened in the night by the sound of galloping horses at the foot of the hill.
The white shirts, Abner. Riding towards Trooper's house.
Well, we should never have let him and his wife and kids stay down
there. Oh, I couldn't knock him out of it.
Gideon sent a man down to see what had happened. Flames from a dozen burning homes licked the sky before he staggered back up the hill to report.
Trooper's body's laying out on the roadway. This old woman's body's laying near. The kid was burned in the house.
Burned alive?
That's what I heard those clanmen say. I crawled close enough to hear them.
How many are there?
Close on to 300 men. The sheriff and Jason, you were among them.
What else did you hear, Andy?
Well, from the way they talk, I figure they're getting ready to attack this here plantation house.
Out of the darkness came the attack. White-hooded men dashed up the hill, their guns spitting fire. At 75 yards, the attack was crushed and the Klansmen faded back into the darkness. And then, silence. Painful, threatening silence, broken only by the groans of the wounded. Until daylight.
Oh, Jackson, I come up. Me, Sheriff Bentley.
Come along.
I ought to shoot down that skunk. I could do it just as easy as
not. No, Abner, that's the Klan's way.
Morning, Jackson. I want to talk to you.
All right. Talk.
You got a doctor here. We got a gosh awful lot of wounded down there, and no one to treat him. One of the boys wounded real bad.
What's wrong with him, Sheriff?
I won't let you go down there, Jeff.
I said, what's wrong with him, Sheriff?
A gunshot broke his leg. Foot's all black and swollen. I reckon it'll have to be cut off.
The hell with you and your wounded, Sheriff.
Now listen, son. You come down with me and amputate that man's leg. I promise we'll let you come back here safely.
I'll get my instruments.
You stay here, Jeff. Don't you realize those men want to kill us? That word don't mean a thing.
That man will die if I don't operate on him. I've got to go down there, Father. Well, I guess that's all, Sheriff.
Will he recover?
Yes. Follow my instructions and he'll be all right. I'll go up on the hill now.
Not so fast, Negro. You know who I am?
No, I don't.
My name's Huger, Jason Huger. I head up the Klan hereabouts, and I don't like Negroes, especially the uppity kind. I don't like Negro congressmen or doctors. Understand me, Negro?
Perfectly. Now, if you let me pass...
Hold on. Where'd you think you're going?
Back to the house.
What? Let you go back up again? And maybe have you shoot at us? No. We'll have to kill you anyhow, so might as well do it right now. You imagine that black Negro.
The Klansman hung Jeff's body from a tree in full view of the Carwell people on the hill. And after that, the end came swiftly. Another white shirt attack was repelled, but several of Gideon's men were killed. And even worse, the guns were running short of ammunition. The end came close, and Gideon turned to his wife.
Rachel, honey, believe me, whatever happens, I didn't want this.
You did what was best, Gideon.
I always loved you, Rachel, all the time I was away in Washington.
I know, Charlie.
Gideon, they got a cannon down there.
A cannon?
Look out the window. You can see him setting it up at the foot of the hill. Must have brought it from the Columbia Arsenal.
A cannon. Well, this is the end, Rachel. They'll shell the house and blow it to kindling wood.
The first shell missed the house. Gideon ordered a white flag raised so that the women and children might be saved. The Klansman answered with a shot which exploded squarely on the roof. No place was safe now, and there was no escape. In the end, Gideon sent the men and women and children into the cellar.
Listen to me, folks! Please! Listen to me!
Our house is burning. We all know now. We're gonna die here in this cellar. I remind me of the children of Israel coming out of the land of Egypt, coming out of slavery. That's the way it is with us. We Negroes are only 10 years out of slavery, but our people will never be slaves again. Here at Carwell, we put our foot on the Freedom Road. We showed that black men and white men could get along together, get along just like brothers. We showed that a good life could be made here, and all that won't be forgotten. Somewhere, sometime, men are going to remember what we did here, pick up where we left off. This much I can promise. What we did won't be wasted. Others are going to follow in our footsteps. Our people will walk on the Freedom Road.
Gideon's last memory as the walls of the house caved in was of the beginning, of how a people had been slaved, bought and sold like cattle. His last memory was of the first brave years of freedom. His last thought was of the strength which had taken his people through a long war, the courage with which they had built on the ruins of war the basis for a better future. Even in that last anguished moment of fading memory, Gideon Jackson knew that the future belongs to the men who join hands and build. Long after the destroyers were forgotten, he knew those men would be remembered with pride as the pioneers, the trailbreakers of Freedom Road. You've been listening to the second and final installment of Freedom Road, Howard Pratt, great novel of the post-Civil War years in the South. The book was adapted for radio by Michael Sklar and produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Music by James Luzito was under the direction of Jerry Sears. Members of the cast included Hilda Sim, Fred O'Neill, Lou Poland, Will Gear, Sanford Beckert, Humphrey Davis, Walter Mosby, Roy Allen, Alex Gourby as narrator, your announcer, George Willard. Next week, an original radio drama by Owen Dodson entitled Roll Call. If you'd like to attend a broadcast of New World A-Comin', write for tickets to WMCA, New York 19, New York. This is America's leading independent station.